Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You are listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For those people that might be unfamiliar with my voice, again, my name is Peter Mingles. We host this radio show every Saturday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. on the Central side. And on this radio show specifically, we talk with a gentleman. His name is Scott Johnson. This is Scott Johnson's show. So if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/Scott-Johnson, you'll be able to hear the previous radio shows that we've done. And the way this whole thing got started is, and I'm really not good with dates, I think it's maybe going to be like 5 or 6 years ago on Labor Day, I did a radio show a couple of weeks prior to that, maybe a week or so prior to that, with a gentleman named Roger Van Blissingen, who's an MLM critic, who writes for Seeking Alpha. And when I read an article, several articles from Roger, I decided that I was going to call him up and ask him to expand upon that, you know, have him on the radio show, because some of the things he was very critical about MLM were valid, and I thought they were interesting points. So he was on the radio show, and Scott Johnson called me up afterwards, and that's how this radio show got started. Scott said to me, hey, you know, there's something that people aren't paying attention to, and they don't talk a lot about. And I said, what's that, Scott? And he said, the tool scam. So I had never spoken to Scott before, so I didn't know a lot about his background or what he was doing. So I also had an idea of what I thought he might be talking about, because I was part of Amway a couple of times. The first time I joined Amway, I remember, I wanted to learn about MLM. My background was in direct sales and direct sales management. Electrolux is the company I was with, and they introduced an MLM compensation plan that went away only because the sales reps took advantage of it. And that's another, you know, radio show. But the reality was, as I said, you know, I made a lot of money when we did that MLM component of Electrolux. So maybe I should learn a little bit more about this, because that really was something else. So when I joined Amway, I learned about books and tapes and functions. Now, I was always reading books and listening to audio tapes. Matter of fact, I probably didn't even know if my radio worked because I was listening to so many tapes. So I was into this whole self-development thing, but I got very frustrated because there seemed to be a big focus on recruiting, and that wasn't going to be my problem for me, because I was used to recruiting a direct sales force. But man, they were just kind of handing me these stupid tapes, and they were stupid tapes. They weren't good tapes. They were the same tapes of people about rags to riches. I'm like, how many of these do I have to listen to? Okay, I already got my belief system up. You know, sure, it's possible. And they would, and another one, and then they would ask me to go to these meetings. I'm like, why are we going to these meetings? The same people show up. There's hardly any new people. And then the other thing was, why do I have to go to all these functions? You know, go to a function for what? To hear the same thing I heard on the tape. You're making the tapes out of the functions. What the? There's no teaching. I mean, they're nice. They're nice people. There's social interactions. I could see why there might be a glue, but I don't need this. I don't need the social interactions. So I quit. And then I joined again, and I quit. And then I joined again, and I quit. So I was pretty sure I knew what Scott was talking about. But when he told me one of his website names, which is stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com, so his website, stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com, I knew that he was talking about Amway. So we started talking about that, and then all of a sudden I said, let's do a couple of radio shows on this. I don't know how many radio shows we'll do about the same topic, Scott, you know, the tool scam, but let's see where it goes. And then what we started to do is, I didn't realize he knew that much about MLM, and he was that much into it. Plus, Herbalife was going on, Bill Ackman was going on, Vima was being shut down temporarily by the FTC. So there's a lot of information. And as a result of that, we've had a lot of information to be able to go over a lot of our different radio shows. So I thought, when I took a look at this MLM thing, that it would give people freedom. Now, freedom, we'll talk about maybe a little bit today, because it's the 4th of July, if you're listening in, you know, Independence Day. So I looked at MLM as being a source maybe for some freedom, financial freedom, freedom from maybe the confines of working a regular job, you know, time freedom, being able to do kind of like what you want, leverage by working through other people. I thought MLM was going to be a great thing, and it still is when done the right way. But holy cow, just like the United States, I'll throw in my own political thing, just like the United States when they did the independence thing, started off as a good idea, and if you give people long enough, they'll confuse the hell out of it, complicate the hell out of it, and screw up most of it. I think they've done the same thing a lot of times with MLM as well. You know, a good idea, but people complicate the hell out of it, and give them enough time. I always say that, you know, human beings can screw up everything. MLMers do it better. And we are here to talk a little bit about that and have a little bit of education and fun and anything else we're going to talk about here tonight. So, Scott Johnson, thanks for being here.
Well, Peter, thanks for having me. And you're right. It was almost 5 years ago now. It was the Labor Day weekend. I think I called you right on Labor Day. I figured, you know, the guy must not be doing too much on Labor Day itself. And you know, as far as servicing your customers and things of that nature. And sure enough, you picked the phone up and the rest is history. So, it was interesting because just prior to that time frame, it was about, I think, July or August. I think it was more like July of 2015. I started working out in Arizona because I live in Texas, and I was going to an office that I'd never been to before, and I'm driving around trying to find it. I got there early, but I couldn't find the location because the way that addresses weren't posted and the building wasn't marked. And I'm going up and down the street, and all of a sudden I realized, gee, I ran out of time to get breakfast before I am going to be at the meeting, and I always eat breakfast. So I'm just driving around going, man, and I've never done this before, but I did it this morning because I was in such a hurry because I was looking for a restaurant, but I found a hotel, you know, like a Holiday Inn or, you know, one of those kinds of hotels. And I went in and ate their breakfast, even though I wasn't staying there because I was hungry. And I didn't have enough time to go somewhere, you know, to eat and then go to the meeting. So, but on my way there, interestingly, I wouldn't have probably found this unless I was looking for a restaurant in the area. I come across the Vima office. Vima was still in business back then. And I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing because I had been following, you know, the Vima case since they had been temporarily shut down. And it was right at the same time, like you said, with Herbalife, and those were kind of like parallel tracks at about the same stage, if you will, with the FTC investigation. In fact, I think both of them were resolved somewhere around the middle of 2016. And so that's my little Vima story for the morning.
There you go.
Anyway, you're right. If anyone can screw something up, it's either the politicians or the MLMers. They both are equally skilled at that. And certainly the tool scam that you mentioned is just a double screw up because not all MLMs have a tool scam, but the ones that do, and particularly Amway, because it's so sophisticated and profitable, it's to me by far the biggest problem because these guys are making twice as much or five or even 10 times as much from the tools as they are from Amway. And they're quiet about it. They don't say, hey, look at my tool success, because if they did that, it wouldn't be a tool scam. I think it would be out of kilter as far as, you know, charging people for getting training and then not making a profit until they had maybe 100 people in their downline. And therefore the whole thing would collapse, in my opinion, if they did disclose that. And that's why they don't, because they know it would just fall apart. And that's all the meetings and the books and the recordings and the voicemail and the apps and the website access. There's all these different things where they make their money, and it's all kept within the top 1%, you know, the upper levels of the Amway distributorship, platinums and above, essentially. And even at the lowest level, it's not really what I would call abusive from the standpoint of it's only probably a few hundred dollars a month compared to the $2,000 or $3,000 a typical platinum would make from the Amway business. So it's not like it's the tail wagging the dog like it is with the Emerald and above level, where it is multiple times more from the tools as far as profit compared to Amway. Now, the other big problem in MLM, and I think this is common amongst almost all of them, if not all of them, at least I haven't seen any solid evidence of any MLM doing this part right, and that is having enough retail sales. And we're talking about sales of the product or service, whatever the MLM is offering to customers, which does not include the downline. Okay, it's got to be non-distributor customers, just like a customer that walks into a regular store. They're not a distributor for the store. They just go in there and buy stuff. And that's how we define customers in MLM land as well. And that's where a lot of companies get into trouble. Both Vima and Herbalife, in fact, were required to keep records of their customer sales and a lot of other details so that the FTC could come in and verify. In fact, the settlement with Herbalife said, we're willing to pay a auditor for 7 years, which is now about 4 years into that, I guess. But we're going to pay them for 7 years to come in and look at our records and make sure we're doing all the other things that we promised to do. That's one of the many things that they signed up for. And so they're supposed to be keeping records of names of the customers and their addresses and phone numbers and the products they bought, I believe. Lots of information that can be audited. And we really haven't heard much about how that audit's going. I know that early on there was a big frenzy, a big FOIA, right, Freedom of Information Act, that somebody put in. And when the records came out, I mean, the CIA would be just so, just so, what's the right word? proud, I guess, would be the word.
The CIA and Hewlett-Packard, because the ink toners that were used for the black redacted sections probably burnt out most printers as they were trying to print them out.
Exactly, yeah. The black ink salesman is retired now. It was literally at least 90-95% redacted. I mean, they had like the headings of the sections, but everything else was redacted, and the reason was given was it was, commercially competitive information. And so it was a big joke, really, as far as any kind of record. But the legal company that was eventually hired to do that, they're cleaning up. And so, everybody's happy, I guess. And so it's really calmed down. There really hasn't been too much said about Herbalife recently that I found online, at least. It seems like they are doing what they said they would do. Whether they're cheating or not, that depends on whether the legal firm catches them. And I actually called the legal firm and offered my services to them, even free of charge. And they decline. That's the way it goes. You can't get everything. You can try and then say, hey, they're going to make up their mind. They're going to either accept the assistance or they're not. And they didn't. So just kind of move on from there. In fact, I was the only individual who took up the FTC's offer when this it was actually a competitive bid situation where the FTC said, okay, who wants to sign up to be the Herbalife auditor? And the FTC specifically said, by the way, you can sign up if you want to just help out. You don't have to sign up, to run the whole thing. If you want to just contribute, you can also put your name in the hat, which I did. And I'm the only one that did that. But still, the company, the legal firm didn't take me on, and so that's that.
Hold on one second. I just want to parlay off that before we move on. It was very interesting that the FTC got a lot of help from Bill Ackman doing a lot of research. He probably did more research on the Herbalife debacle and scam, quote unquote, than anybody else on the planet, according to his records that he has to provide to his investors. In his hedge fund, he spent over $50 million on research about Herbalife and the the deception and all that other sort of stuff. And a lot of the stuff that he did said that it actually came out to be true. a little bit later on. However, the point I wanted to make was they didn't really go after Herbalife because they didn't. Some people said that they didn't want, the FTC didn't want to be doing Bill Ackman's work. So he had a short on the stock where he's bringing it down to $1 billion, or he would have made $1 billion if the thing kind of closed down or went down below a certain number. But I just want to underline that statement that the FBI, the FTC didn't want to do Bill Ackman's work. So I'm going to bring that sentence back in a little bit later on in this conversation when we talk about a company called Success by Health. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Peter. I think there's always been this standoffish position that the government takes. Another example of that, by the way, is with Nexium. You know, Keith Raniere, that character, he's been in jail now for over 2 years and still awaiting sentencing. It's been delayed by the coronavirus. But the guy that writes Frank Report, frankreport.com, the guy's name is Frank Parlato, and he has done by far, it's not even close, the second place is not even close, by far the most research on Nexium and Keith Raniere and his clan of women, evil women, circling around like the flying monkeys of the Wizard of Oz. And I mean, he's written just tons of information on his website, and I'm sure he has other information that he has not published. But he has stated before that he has never been contacted by the FBI or the Department of Justice. They've left him alone completely, even though to me he's the very best source for that. And if you want to fit in your example, go right ahead.
Sure. So there's and this is a little bit out of order, if you will, but here we go. There's a company called SBH, Success by Health, that's I know about only because I was there following them because one of our guest hosts on a radio show, her name is Jody Bear, became a distributor. So a gentleman named Jay Nolan started Success by Health, I think, in 2017, and it was shut down, a hard shutdown, by the FTC, where they froze his assets, his wife's assets, two executives. They're going through a receiver, blah, blah, blah. It's really nasty. But in the records, and I'm not saying anything that is hearsay any longer, I kind of suspected it. Everybody else kind of suspected what I'm going to say next. But now it's been actually officially done in some court documents, so I think I could say it without considering it a hearsay. What happened with Success by Health and why they were shut down was because of the number of complaints that they received by the FTC. Now, by the way, Success by Health, I think, did something like $7 million in business in like a year and a half. Not billion, not $100 million, $7 million in a year and a half, which is pretty puny small for a network marketing company. Well, there was a gentleman who was one of the distributors who was brought over from another company when they started. And that distributor, I'm going to say allegedly because I didn't see the sex tape, was having an affair with Jay Nolan's secretary. And this gentleman was married with three young children. And when Jay Nolan found out about that, he said, hey, you know, that's not something I agree with. So you got to stop, and, you know, you got to put your marriage back together. And a lot of people can slam Jay Nolan for a lot of things, I'm sure. And if you read the one-sided paperwork from the FTC, of course, it always will be that way. But he said, man, you got to put your life back together. You shouldn't have never done anything like this. And he gave the guy a chance, and his wife was showing up to the meetings from what I've heard. So I got to throw that in there. So some of this is hearsay but true. And was making the disruption because, you know, hey, you're sleeping with my husband kind of a thing going on. So it was disruptive. He says, and Jay Nolan tells this one guy, hey, man, you can't be bringing your wife to these meetings. It's really disrupting some stuff. One thing led to another. The guy didn't keep his end of the bargain. And he basically said to Jay Nolan, I'm going to get you shut down. I'm going to get you shut down. So what he did was coordinated some complaints with the FTC, and there were about 27 or 30 of them that, by the way, were written inside the thing, and they can all be pinpointed back to this one distributor who coordinated a complaint job against Jay Nolan, whereas Jay Nolan basically says, you know, this is wrong, You know, and these people were complaining about a whole bunch of things and all blah, 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 blah. The reality was is whether they know it or not, whether they want to recognize it or not, the FTC is doing this gentleman's job to try to get Jay Nolan shut down. So they wouldn't do it for Bill Ackman, who had $50 million in research against Herbalife, but they would do it for a guy that was cheating on his wife and made a threat that I'm going to shut you down, and filed with, you know, 27 or whatever other of his, you know, distributors, complaints against the FTC, and that's why they opened up the case to shut him down. So, and Jay Nolan has had his his personal assets shut. Some of the guys that are executives from the company. Now, remember, the company's only a year and a half, 2 years old. They had some people's personal accounts shut down that had been in this industry for over 30 years. They had their assets frozen. So not the assets that they might have gotten from Success by Health. Their whole assets frozen. So you start to take a look at this and you say, wait a minute, who is the FTC really working for? So, or do they even know this? And by the way, this was all brought up in court, so there's nothing that I'm saying right now that is wrong. But it just, you know, when we talk about prosecutorial discretion and some of the overreach, sometimes it happens, and the things that happen in this industry, I just wanted to kind of shed a little bit of light on that because it was appropriate fitting when we were talking about Herbalife and the FTC not doing their job. This is one where I think the FTC really went into some overreach, whereas with Herbalife, they gave him a $200 million fine, basically said, hey, yeah, we'll send an auditor out there, but we're not going to show the public any of the records from the auditor. I mean, what the hell's going on here, Scott? You know what I mean? Like, what the hell? Where's the consistency? Or who are they really working for, or what are they really doing? So however our Building Fortunes Radio listening audience wants to dissect what I just said, those are some of the things that happen. So it's kind of screwy. So back to you.
Yeah, well, I know probably that Jay Nolan didn't hire a couple of former FTC commissioners to represent him or have other, you know, massive contributions to the attorney general of his state, you know, to provide cover, you know,
right.
All those things that Herbalife is able to do, you know, and who knows what else was going on behind the scenes, you know, as far as dirty politics with all that. There's no telling. When you're a big company, you can do those kinds of things and often get away with it. And perhaps, you know, if Bill Ackman had been a little bit more, let's say, discreet, and I'm not saying he should have been, but if he had been, you know, not been real public like he was, because he had, this was back in December of 2012, he came out with a, I think, 342-page slide PowerPoint presentation. It took him 3 or 4 hours to go through the thing. I mean, he went into all kinds of detail and all kinds of different areas and was very public about it. He said, I've taken a $1 billion short on Herbalife. He was very serious and very open about it, whereas I assume that other distributor with Jay Nolan was a little bit more discreet as far as getting his people together and say, okay, you write your complaint. Let's not make them look the same. I don't know if this is what happened, but I'm kind of thinking that, you know, that's probably what happened, just to make it look like it was all on the up and up. And certainly, you know, to me, whether it's Herbalife or Success for Health or whichever, it really doesn't matter who did it, why they did it, you know, as far as providing the input. The FTC's job is to find out, are these accusations true or not? If they're not, then they drop the case. If they are, they go forward. To me, that's the way it should work. Obviously, it doesn't work that way. And it's interesting that they were able to get action with just, 20 or 30 or 40 complaints. I guess what the FTC must do is factor in something related to the size of the MLM, because certainly there's been at least that many complaints filed against Amway over the years. I just can't imagine that there has not been. And so they must take some kind of a, you know, volume-based rate of complaints, you know, this many complaints per $1 billion or $1 million, that's what trips their trigger to investigate an MLM, because that's a pretty low number to go after any MLM. And certainly there has to have been that many complaints against larger MLMs, whether it be Herbalife or Amway and, you know, others, I'm sure. So that's a really interesting story to hear how that all came down. And I guess that whole case with Success by Health?
Yes, SBH,
that's kind
Success
of just
by
in the
Health.
Courts now, right?
It's just in the courts, right? As a matter of fact, I did a somewhat controversial political cartoon, I'm going to call it, because Stacey Bosley was the federal FTC's expert witness in the courtroom. And Stacey Bosley's gal, who is she's an academic. She's never done MLM, but she writes about it well, and or she thinks she writes about it well, and she's an FTC witness. She made a comment in one of the articles, and in this politically charged world, she wrote a newspaper. She wrote a publication, I believe, in one of the magazines or something like that. Relative to, she's also an associate college professor. And she basically compared MLM to the Ku Klux Klan, the KKK. And she basically said that there's a lot of people that are very interested in the comparison between the two. And that was really weird as far as the KKK and MLM. Where is the comparison? I've never heard that one before. But she said lots of people are intrigued with that comparison. Like, I've been around this industry for a long time. I've never heard that one before. You know, Helen, Scott, we're the people that probably make the most comparisons to, you know, sex trafficking and blah, blah, blah. Where the hell does it come with the KKK? So could there be, if you will, was some of the allegations by Jay Nolan. Could it be that I'm a black man or I look like a black man? He's mixed. And maybe this expert witness is biased against black people? So I did a little political cartoon about George Floyd and the FTC basically being like the police car. And if you remember the famous George Floyd picture of the cop kneeling on his neck. So that's kind of like what's happening right now with the FTC. The FTC basically has the receiver kneeling on Jay Nolan's neck. And the attorney who's helping Jay Nolan called me up and asked, hey, can I use that? I'm just like, sure, why not? I'm probably going to get me in trouble, but sure, why not? And as we were speaking, he's like, I don't think I've ever seen such a strong case where the FTC they didn't tell the truth to the judge to be able to get the restraining order for the frozen assets. So he feels pretty strongly he actually might be able to get that whole thing overturned. So here's my point. My point is that it's all about the impact it has on the industry, the impact it has on the people mostly, because there are a lot of good people that were working with SBH that were selling products retail. I know they used to have conference calls. I used to hear them on our radio show. If you go to buildingfortunesradio.com, you'll hear them on our radio show selling retail products. So there was a lot of things that I think probably need to be further investigated. And if you will, there's so many companies that the FTC really should be going after, not one of the marginal ones. And I think one of the marginal ones that they went after Jay Nolan was because he had previously had a tangle with the FTC when he was just a distributor for a company called Big Smart a decade or so ago. So it's one of those, you know, do they have it out for the guy? Like they have it out for BK Barreco. Like BK Barreco, they're on, you know, he's on their watch list, I'm sure, all the time. They just can't wait for him to screw up one more time to be able to shut him down again. And is Jay Nolan one of those people that are being targeted? And they're saying or asking, and is he being targeted because he's you know, visibly a black gentleman. He looks, he's mixed, but he looks like a black guy. Is he being targeted for that as well? Is a fair enough allegation, basically, when your federal witness is saying, hey, it's like the Ku Klux Klan. Like, where the hell is that coming from? So anyway, it's just a little bit of drama that we're kind of witnessing behind the scenes.
Yeah, so back you to know, I think what Stacey Bosley was doing was jumping the shark. If you remember the old show Happy Days, jumping
right.
the shark was in relation to the show was kind of getting long in the tooth, and they were looking for something new to do. And so they had Fonzie, I think it was, you know, he was on water skis, and he jumped up on a ramp on the water skis, and he jumped over a shark that was in the water. And that's where that saying comes from, is doing something, you know, just really outlandish to get attention. And I think she did it to get attention to herself more than anything else. And the shark that she jumped there was really, you know, the predicate to that was laid down by a guy by the name of G. Robert Blakey. And you can Google Blakey, B-L-A-K-E-Y. He actually wrote in the 1970s the RICO fraud statutes. He was a primary author of that. And when Procter & Gamble was suing Amway back in the 90s, Procter & Gamble asked him, well, what do you think about Amway's operation? And he said, this looks just like the mafia. And he had written a law, right? I mean, so he kind of knew what he was talking about. And that's what the RICO statutes were written for back in the 1970s, was to go after the mafia. But since then, it's been used for various other white-collar crimes. But I think that's what Stacey was doing, was jumping the shark. You know, she could have just said, it looks like the mafia. It looks just like, you know, G. Robert Blakey's mafia analogy with Amway. She could have said that. It would have all sort of fit together. It would have had a precedent to it, but she had to be, you know, overly dramatic and compare it. And I think there are some comparisons between a lot of MLMs and the KKK, not from a racial context, but from it's a secret society, right? There's a closed group that knows things that most other people don't know. They have plans that most other people don't know. You know, it's very insular to itself. So from that point of view, I actually agree with Stacey Bosley that a lot of MLMs are like the KKK, not that they're racist, but again, that closed sort of a organization. So anyway, I guess that's my two cents on all of that.
There we go.
It'll be
Absolutely.
Interesting to see how this goes forward, you know. So I guess right now it's just kind of with the judge, and he's trying to sort things out. Is that kind of where it is? Everyone's kind of giving their two cents, and he's
It's live in the court system as we speak right now. And what they did with Jay Nolan, besides freezing the company assets, they also went out after more of his personal assets as well. So, and by the way, from what I've heard, he suspected that they might be looking at him, because somebody at one of his banks called him up and said, hey, you know, they're asking for your records. And the bank's not supposed to tell their customers if that's happening, but from what I understand, that's what happened. And he had his attorney call the FTC and say, hey, what's up? You know, like, if there's something going on, maybe we should talk about this before you guys have any action against us. They said, nope, everything's fine, nothing wrong. And he checked in a couple of times, and they said, nothing wrong, nope, everything's fine. And then all of a sudden, he gets his assets shut down. When he winds up landing, you know, they did it perfectly as far as trying to destroy his company. He had an event, and he had a whole bunch of people coming in for the event, and he was flying in from out of the country, and he lives out of the country. And they froze his assets, screwed up the event, disrupted the whole operation. Obviously didn't pay the people that had been owed the commissions, and, you know, just try to do everything like that, if you will, receiver, trying to stand on the neck of George Floyd like that cop did, and basically just kind of basically like choke him out. And that's what's really happening with him and the other people as well. So it's very interesting to see how it goes. So nobody ever said everything was going to be fair, but in the same aspect, it's a little bit on the overreaching side, in my opinion, by the FTC. they didn't have to do the things that they did to try to destroy people's lives. Because at this point, that's what they're doing. They're destroying their livelihood. Maybe not their lives for a whole bunch of people, but the livelihoods of some people for sure. But anyway, all right.
Yeah.
So let's move on to some. Yeah, let's move on to some other topics. But this was a one that I just wanted to squeeze in there when we were talking about what was going on with the FTC action.
Yeah,
that's
a good point. And I think it's a good thing for everybody to keep in mind that law enforcement can lie right to your face, but if you lie to them, then you're in trouble. So anytime you're in any situation, guilty or innocent, just keep that in mind, that they can lie right to your face. You can ask them questions and they can say completely the opposite of the truth, and that's perfectly legal. That's, you know, going up to the Supreme Court. So that's why I always tell people, just be really careful anytime you're talking to a, you know, whether it's a police officer, a regulator, anybody, you know, that's in the executive branch, that they can lie to you. So it's just one of those things. It's I don't think it's right, but it's the law. So, you know, you can think it's not right all you want, but if it's gone to the Supreme Court and they bought into it, then your goose is cooked, basically, if you go down that path and just believe that the government is going to tell you the truth when you ask them a question, because they are not required to. It's to me, it's not constitutional if that's the way it works, so keep that in mind. All right, so what are we going to do here, Peter? We've had guests on for so long, I almost forgot how to do our non-guest show.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, so for those people over the last – yeah, so tell them a little – let's bring them up to speed on what you did over the last couple of weeks, because we did have a couple of really good guests that you probably want to at least bring people up to speed on what we did.
Yeah, we did have two really good guests. One of them was named Pacey Bean. And also there was Elaine Hill that was on last week. And both these women were in Amway. Pacey much more recently within the last couple of years. And Elaine back when I was in Amway back in the 90s. And they told very similar stories as far as how Amway works. So, you know, the big picture is it hasn't changed much. And they were also in different lines of sponsorship. And again, the different lines of sponsorship are not that much different. You know, there's little details, there's little pieces of language and that kind of thing. But as far as how it basically works, it's the same. It always has been the same. And one of the really interesting things that Pacey brought up at the end of her show, and by the way, I've got I'm starting to put the recordings where we've had guests on the show, Peter, on my Facebook page, on my YouTube page. If you type in Scott Tex, that's T-E-X, Johnson, you'll see my YouTube channel. And on there I've got just a few, actually I've only got one video of Andy Andrews, who back in the early 2000s essentially admitted and stated very clearly that they make several times more from the tools than they do from Amway. And then I've got Rich DeVos on an audio recording, and then I've got several others, recent people, and I'm working my way backwards now in time. And so you can actually hear the shows both on your website as well as my YouTube page. But I'm not going to put shows like this on there because these are more like snapshots in time. I'm just going to put the guests on there telling of their experiences and kind of collect them in one place, you know, rather than having to sort of sift through, now that we have somewhere around 250 shows, for someone to search through all of our shows on the website, they can just go to the YouTube page. If they just want to listen to guests tell their experiences, they can find those there. But yeah, both those women did a great job just confirming everything that we already knew, but it's always good to get confirmation from different people. And there's always little differences. Like, you know, Elaine said, and I think part of this was on the phone with me before the show, she said that she was out in Oregon at the time. She's in South Carolina now. But when she was in Amway, she was in Oregon, and she was in a line of sponsorship. It came down from Jaeger, whereas the West Coast is predominated by a guy who's also passed away, Ron Puryear, running Worldwide Dream Builders. And she told me every once in a while we would bump into one of these Worldwide Dream Builders people, and we insisted in telling them that we don't sell. she was very adamant, you know, this is what they were taught. If you ever bump into a Worldwide Dream Builder person, just let them know we don't sell. You know, we don't sell products. That's beneath us. So that just kind of cracked me up, because my line of sponsorship, which also came down from Jaeger, and it split after a couple of three, people. They talked about retail a little bit, but not very much. And certainly it wasn't verified in order to get your downline volume bonus, which is by Amway's rule. That was never confirmed, and we were always paid. So essentially they just ignored that rule. But it's just interesting, those little differences, and probably part of that was based on just the environment they were in, you know, being around the Worldwide Dream Builders people from time to time, you know, bumping into them, just trying to, I guess just to make themselves look superior in some way. It just kind of cracked me up when she told me that part of it. But the other really interesting thing we got into with Pacey was the names list thing, and how that can really be trouble, especially after you leave. When you give that names list to your upline, they consider it theirs. And even if you haven't left, maybe you're not real active, what they'll do, and what we were taught to do, was to get that names list from, you know, somebody in your downline, that whether they quit or they're still in and just not doing much, and start making contacts. And then if you find someone that's interested, then you sponsor them under that person that's not very active, to get them moving again. Now, you could also, if you want to, call the person that quit and say, hey, this thing's really working now. I just called so-and-so that was on your names list, and they're in. You know, do you want me to put them under me or put them under you? You know, that's what we were taught to do. And then also she was talking about how they would call people that were more in her professional realm and, you know, potentially be pretty embarrassing, and you wouldn't know if you were blacklisted, you know, because if somebody ignores you, you don't know you're being ignored, right? But that's certainly potentially a professional, limiting activity when you turn over your names list to your upline and they start calling people that are in your professional realm, and all of a sudden, you know, they think you're in Amway and they don't think much of Amway. And now they think less of you, probably. So that's why I always encourage people, look, when you get out of Amway, even before you're in Amway, you know, don't wait to join Amway. You know, take your names list, which is everyone you know, and contact them and tell them this Amway thing is a real scam. It's an illegal pyramid because there's little to no retail sales, and it's a RICO fraud because of the tool scam. And that's all you have to really tell them. You don't have to go into a lot of detail unless they ask, but, you know, just sort of inoculate them, if you will. You know, give them the idea Amway equals bad, and you've done your job such that if they're ever approached by Amway in the future, they probably won't join, whereas if you do not inoculate them, they could join, and since you know them, guess what? They know you, and so they're going to contact you. So, you know, save them from that loss of money, time, relationships, all that stuff that Amway creates, and tell them, and also tell the FTC of your experience, because to me that's the one way that we have of really shutting down this scam is to get the FTC involved, and it takes complaints. We don't know how many, but it takes complaints. So I guess that's kind of my impression of those shows. What did you find interesting?
What was really interesting is the common theme throughout the decades. because we had spoken to some people that were in the 90s that had been scammed, and they were basically retelling their story, and then people in the early 2000s, and then, you know, 6 months ago, if you will, or just recently. So, and it's the same story. So it's a timeless story. And it all is relative to the cult-like tendencies of the tool scam. And if they would eliminate that, then it could be a halfway decent deal. You know, I'm sure the scientists with the Amway products probably are, you know, honorable people, and the people in that work in the factory are honorable people, and there's probably a lot of really good people inside there. It's just the marketers that screw it up. So they don't tell the truth, and that's where the biggest issue for me is relative to that whole tool scam. And they basically steal the opportunity away from a lot of the people that we've had, and their stories are just the people that are willing to tell it. And there are thousands, tens of thousands, maybe even approaching millions of people that have been scammed in a similar way. So in my humble opinion, I think it's one of the biggest disservices that anybody could ever do to the MLM industry. And that's what Amway allows to happen. And one way or another, that's one of the reasons why we want to do this. And I don't know if it's ever going to shut the company down. I'm really not interested in, you know, taking anybody's job away that might be a scientist or a guy that works at the factory. But I do want to make sure that we throw up a warning flag for anybody that might join, that they realize that, you know what, if you're going down this track, you're probably not going to make any money and you're probably going to lose a lot. So back to you.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely. It's really the Amway executives and the upper level of the IBOs, you know, particularly the diamonds and above, that know exactly what's going on, and they just keep doing it. And they know that it's wrong, but they just keep doing it. I think they both feel kind of trapped, you know, in their habits, and they can't figure out a way out, so they just keep doing it. And they're going to keep doing it until they get caught. That's just the way it goes.
Absolutely.
You just have to keep plugging along. But yeah, good stories. Good stories. And by the way, speaking of Vima, and I looked for it real quick here. I had to shut my computer down recently and start it back up, so I don't have it on my screen right now. But I got a couple of texts from Vima. I think it was a couple weeks ago and a few days ago. You know, basically saying, "Hey, we miss you. Why don't you come back and buy some products?" And if you remember, when Vima was shut down, I guess it was when it was first restarted, I actually signed up to buy some products. But I figured out that you could order the products without supplying your credit card or any other paying information. And so I got some free Vima jungle juice, whatever it was, and so they have my name, and of course, they emailed me a couple times going, "Hey, we just shipped you some stuff, but we don't have your payment information," and I just ignored it. So, so if I'm guilty of a crime, so be it. But anyway, I got these text messages on my phone, you know, basically saying, "We miss you. And, you know, please order some stuff from us. And you really need to take care of your immune system at these times." And I don't know if that crosses the line for the FTC. And I've been meaning to, you know, submit a complaint with the FTC saying, "Hey, this looks like the same stuff you've been sending out letters to people about." You know, I think it's been, 16 companies now? There was, I think, a group of 10 and then another group of 6 MLMs that the FTC said either they were making income claims that were extraordinary, or they were making health claims during the coronavirus time that were not kosher with the FTC, and they told them to knock it off. And I think that these texts are probably crossing the line. I mean, they're kind of carefully worded. You could tell they didn't say coronavirus and that, but they said something along the lines of "at this time" and your immune system. So I think that's enough for the FTC to go on. I'll submit that and see what happens with it. But anyway, that just reminded me, talking about Nima. Good stuff, Peter. Anything else on that one?
Nope, that's it. So let's move on to some of the new things that are happening this week or over these past weeks.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, that actually, yeah, 2 or 3 weeks now since we've had all these guests, which have been great. There's a website called BehindMLM.com that we use very frequently to get information, because these guys do a really good job of collecting and keeping us up to date on different stories, and we don't cover nearly all of them. So I just encourage people to go to BehindMLM.com. In the upper right-hand corner, there's a search thing. You can put in somebody's name, a company name, and it'll pop up all the stories that have those terms included. And it's a really nice resource. We don't usually agree with their analysis because I think we have a common opinion as far as what's right and what's wrong with MLM, and they have a different opinion. Although over the years, they seem to be coming around more to, you know, our view of things, the lack of retail sales particularly. They really haven't caught on to the tool scam yet. But, you know, that's common with most people. Most people, when I talk about the tool scam, it just goes right over their head. They don't understand how important that is in terms of running a business. You know, if you're going to be operating at a loss until you have 100 people in your group, that's not a good thing, because that means only one out of every 100 people is even making a profit. And that's not the way, you know, to build a good MLM business. I'm not saying the lowest level person that just got started should be making a profit. Maybe they should, maybe they shouldn't, but certainly you shouldn't need 100 people, you know, to break even and start making a net profit. So, but anyway, they're doing their thing, and we'll let them do their thing and just talk about the stories they put up there. So I'm going down the page a little bit. I'm still on July 3rd, 2020. There's several stories here that, you know, just aren't real big stories. They're kind of the typical cryptocurrency that we've been seeing a lot of and so forth. But this one caught my eye. It's July 3rd, 2020 today, and it's Renga Life. And the couple here is Jason and Yunjung Cardiff. And the headline is Cardiff's contempt appeal denied, Pujad facing jail. So there's actually three people here. There's a couple, Jason and Unjung Cardiff, and they've been going back and forth in the courts for months and months and months, you know, being found in contempt and wiggling their way out of it. And then the coronavirus came along, and they didn't put him in jail, even though they weren't conforming to the orders, the court orders to produce records. And it's just been going back and forth and back and forth. And I think coming up later this month, there's going to be a quote unquote come to Jesus hearing. And they're either going to have to spit out the documents, or I think they're going to be in jail. That's my conclusion, because, you know, I think the judge is finally fed up with these people, and so is the FTC, very fed up with them. So we'll see what happens. I think it's July 17th or something. And then there's another guy, Jacques Pujad, whatever his name is. He's also not producing records, and he's been going back and forth with contempt. And, you know, it's just amazing to me how these people just delay things. You know, it's all these lawyer parlor trick games that are played in court. And they're just delaying. I think it's the inevitable. I think these people are, you know, really guilty, and we'll find out. But it's just so frustrating to see how slowly the judicial system, I almost said justice, I always slip up there. The judicial system is so slow. But like they say, it grinds slow, but it grinds finely. So so as they ground these people up into little pebbles and little grains of sand, you know, I think eventually we're going to see the right thing here. It's just like it's just been going on for so long, though. It's just incredible how long it's been drawn out. And of course, there's extenuating circumstances with the coronavirus. But I mean, they're a young couple. They probably won't even get any symptoms if they end up in jail and getting coronavirus. And actually, it's an advantage from the standpoint that they're not going to be able to visit any of their elderly friends and relatives while they're in jail. So, you know, if they do get sick, it's almost like, you know, getting an inoculation, if you will. So to me, it's just such a non-story for them, you know, the coronavirus. And it's actually better than if they got it while they were running around. But then there's a second story here. It's the same bait, but it happened, I think, just before the second story. And this one really got my attention because apparently what this Jason Cardiff guy did, and again, and the headline on this is FTC thwarts Jason Cardiff's COVID-19 mask scheme. And so this guy ordered apparently like $7 million worth of coronavirus masks from China. And he was going through this whole thing with a company and trying to make millions of dollars of profit, obviously to pay for his legal fees, and do some more parlor trick, you know, with his lawyers. And he got caught. And the FTC said, aha, you're not complying with the original order. You're not supposed to be hiding anything that's financial. And apparently they've got some emails from his secretary that she sent to somebody else saying, I have to copy my CEO on this. And, of course, he's the only one copied on the email, because what he's tried to explain, let's be nice about it, is that he's only working for this company as a consultant. You know, he's not in an officer position, but he's just giving them advice on how to order, you know, multiple millions of dollars of probably faulty masks from China, because that's been in the news recently, too. It's just crazy. You know, like we said before, you know, we could all, you know, drink several beers and just use our imagination and try to come up with the wildest stories we can think of. And it wouldn't come close to reality, you know, for this guy to be running around ordering coronavirus masks from China when he should really be in jail right now. And he's violating his sanction to be totally open about his financial dealings during this time period. And he's obviously not doing that. It's just amazing to me how our system works. It's just so amazing what people can get away with. It's like that Mark Scott guy with OneCoin, you know, the lawyer that was found guilty actually of money laundering. What was it? $400 million, something like that.
Right.
And then he's running around because he's awaiting sentencing. He's running around living it up, you know, buying expensive meals. And, you know, I don't know if he's leasing or renting expensive cars or maybe buying them. I don't remember, but just living it up like nobody's business. And this was after he was found guilty. It's just crazy to me how these people can get away with these things, you know, during this time period when they're obviously, you know, either been court ordered to do something or they've actually been found guilty and they're still running around because that's who they are, right? It that's just what comes natural to them. And that's what I've kind of decided is, to us it sounds crazy, but when you put yourself in their shoes, that's just who they are. So I'll hand those stories back to you.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this is that the FTC by itself can't put you in jail. So the FTC has no bearing to be able to put you in jail. However, when you start lying to the FTC or you start defying their rules, you know, these court-ordered rules, or you don't provide the information, then they can start getting you for contempt of court. And then they can put you in jail, you know, or like you got to send in your financial records and you don't, then they're going to put you in jail. And for this guy to do what he's doing with these masks and not disclosing the idea that he's working for somebody else, it's just crazy. So I don't know all the details, but this is just a bad story just coming to a close eventually. And unfortunately, I think it's going to end with they're going to lose their house, they're going to lose everything that they have, and they might even lose their freedom. And I can't say that it's not self-inflicted, because they probably could have settled with the FTC. I really don't think the FTC, and I'm going to stick up for the FTC, it sounds like they're beating up on the FTC a little bit earlier, but I really don't think the FTC has, in this instance, the goal to, like, destroy these people. They're giving them every opportunity to just kind of settle, like just come up with some kind of a settlement. And you know, why would they do it? Why would they act this way? And, you know, in this regard with these people, give them so much rope and then Jay Nolan, they basically shut them down right away, or other people, they shut them down right away. It's just kind of inconsistent as far as their actions. And we're not looking for consistency, of course, because we're dealing with stuff like this. Each case is different, I know, but it's just very interesting. And then Scott, you've been struggling with these names of these people. I just want to tease you a little bit on the next one. So if you read the next article, be careful when you talk about Fred's last name, because
you are.
You are so prescient
in saying that, because I was going to say exactly the same thing. I need to be very careful in reading this next headline. And where would we be without a one-coin story? So this is our one-coin story of the week. And, yes, this is a tongue twister. And the headline is Fred Folk fined $71,700 for promoting OneCoin in Singapore. So this guy's name is Fok Fook Seng, better known as Fred Funk. That's the story. That's right out of the story. I read it verbatim. So apparently, this is kind of news to me. You know, a lot of these different countries have put out warnings and everything about OneCoin, and I really wasn't too aware, or maybe it's just been so long that I forgot, that he was actually charged somewhere between 2016 and 2017 with promoting OneCoin, which was illegal in Singapore at that time. And I don't know how much money he made, but they said here he had 1180 Singapore downline. So to me, $71,000 is a slap on the wrist if I'm thinking, you know, the amount of money that I think he was making from OneCoin compared to this fine, which seems to be minor compared to, you know, what he was probably making from OneCoin back then. So we'll just have to see what happens, but I'm kind of, you know, happy to see Singapore and other countries going after these characters, you know, whether it's Fok Fook Seng or Fred Fok or whatever you want to call them. Again, it's you know, I guess it's good to see, you know, but again, it moves so slow. You think about he was charged with this 2 and 3 years ago, and they just now got around to fining him $71,000, which I think is a slap on the wrist. But anyway, back to you. Go ahead. It's your turn to pronounce his name, Peter.
Yeah, I'm going to – I figured I'm going to let you step in that one. Thank you very much. The other one I think was interesting, although it has really nothing to do with MLM, but it does have some one-tone fingerprints on it, was Igor and his wife, Simbala, from previous OneCoin, they live in a huge mansion over in the Netherlands, I think it is. They had a raid on their house, but it wasn't a raid like you were thinking. It was they had some masked men, allegedly, that were trying to basically rob their house or kidnap their house or kidnap their kids or kidnap them or something. And they had a SWAT team of police officers in there, basically protecting the services. And they were not at the time. They were out doing an event, a virtual event, where they allegedly had 90,000 people viewing it online. But that was a mixed OneCoin story. And when I went to Business for Home, which has always been somewhat partial to this couple, they had a video of their home when they were working with OneCoin. And they have a magnificent home that was taken over from, I think, a celebrity or a political gentleman. Everybody knows who they are in that country. They basically gave people like a tour through the house. And it was no surprise that they've been burglarized. They were burglarized and they gave the guy the blueprint. I'm sure some of those stuff that they had in the video are no longer there anymore because they let the burglars know exactly where they were. But it was just amazing. The stories that this gentleman told and the wealth that they've been spending on other people that I consider victims. And it's, you know, if it were income that was genuinely earned by producing it the way it was supposed to be produced, I would applaud their riches. But knowing that every time he was showing, you know, one of his 5,000 shoes or one of their Gucci bags or one of their other statues that they bought in one of the other countries that they visited, knowing that was paid for by maybe the backs of some guy from Uganda who sold 3 goats to be able to get into OneCoin, or somebody who mortgaged their house, who lost their house, so they can have a Gucci bag or a Chanel whatever or whatever kind of a statue sitting on their mantle as a trophy, just is sickening. So anyway, so having said that, Scott, over to you.
Yeah, and I concur with all of that. I don't have a problem with people making money, but when they make it illegitimately, and then they show it off on top of that, it really is quite disgusting.
Mental illness.
And actually,
it's a mental illness. It's got to be a mental illness.
At the very beginning of that video, Peter, I was thinking that that she was upset with him because he was wearing this shirt that wasn't quite wild enough, you know, for him. But then as the video went on and you got a shot of his pants and his shoes, and he was all in character, because this guy is a character the way he dresses. And he went through his closets and she went through her closets, you know, showing all the clothes. And we've seen him on other YouTube videos over the years where he just wears the most amazing Technicolor clothes you could imagine. It's quite amazing. And the shoes, the wild colors and designs and everything, you know, they're expensive. I mean, you know, these are hundreds and even thousands of dollars, each pair of these shoes. And then all the other trinkets they got from traveling around the world, that they were, you know, kind of reviewing. It's just amazing that, like you said, the Netherlands police that were looking for the burglars didn't realize that these were the real,
oh,
right? The people they were protecting were really the crooks. It's just amazing. Yeah.
You know, the ironic thing is, if you look at these people, if they were separated from whatever, and you had, you know, whatever, if you had a meal with the gentleman, or you're kind of mentored by the gentleman, he's charismatic, he's smart, he's nice, she's the same way, they would be considered good people. It's just they have no clue. Like, that's their willful blindness. They have no clue how wrong they are in the things that they do. It's that mental blind spot that they have. Because as you watch through the video, as he's walking through the 8 floors of his house, and, you know, talking about this and talking about that, and then holding his baby, you could see that, you know what, this is a decent human being. As far as, like, a human being is concerned, he's not a mean guy. He wasn't kicking his cat or beating up on anybody else. He was mentoring people, and we have all these rooms for all these guests, and this is what we do. So he cares about the people that he's got. He doesn't realize he is perpetuating a scam. And only because I think he's so good at it is one of the reasons why he's able to be so wealthy at it. So it's a mental, I don't know, I'm not a clinical psychologist, but it's a mental illness. It's a mental blind spot. People have told him before it's a scam, and he willfully doesn't pay attention. So there's something mentally wrong with him, although he's not mental. You know what I mean? So I don't know if that's the right way to say it. But because of his deficiencies in having empathy towards the people that he's ripping off, or however he justifies it, he's really good at what he does. So anyway, so back to you.
Yeah, it kind of perplexes me. Does he have that blind spot, or does he know he's doing wrong and he just doesn't care? Yeah, it's one or the other, of course, or some mixture, I guess, thereof. And I'm not a psychologist either, but it would be interesting to somehow peer into his mind and draw out exactly what's going on in there, because something's going on, something abnormal.
I've kind of always, you know, liked to study people like him and try to figure out what makes him tick. And I'll share with you, you know how people say sometimes whatever happened in your first 5 years is probably going to determine what happens in the rest of your life. He grew up very, 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 very poor. And he had a neighbor who was rich. and he always wanted to be like his neighbor. So if you listen to one of his interviews, he tells you that story. So as a young man, or as a young boy, I think he latched onto that. And it's kind of like if you've ever watched, like, you know, a duck that's a baby duckling, and all of a sudden he imprints his way on like a cat, and you'd say, well, this would never happen in nature, but it did. For some reason, I think, and I'm making an excuse for him without making an excuse, if you know what I mean. I really think that's an imprint on his brain where there's a blind spot. He wanted to be rich like his neighbor so bad, he doesn't realize all of the things that he does because he's so driven, like that little duckling who was imprinted and bonded with that cat, you know? So it's a weird thing. But unfortunately, that weird thing has cost people hundreds of millions or maybe even billions of dollars. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, I think you're right, Peter. I think he's just blocked out everything else. Everything is single focused, you know, like our dog here that's sitting next to me. When she sees a bunny, when we're out for a walk, she is laser beam focused. There's nothing else on earth that exists for her at that moment.
Right.
I mean, she could be about to get run over by a car and she'd be staring down that bunny rabbit. And I think that's part of what these people do. They get so focused on one thing, and they just don't see the rest of the big picture. But yeah, it's amazing. It's quite amazing. Well, there's another one here that is interesting only because of both me and our guest last week, Elaine Hill, our common upline back in the 1990s, a guy by the name of Don Wilson, who's not in this story on Behind MLM, but it's July 2nd, 2020, and the headline is Juva Review, Nutrition and a Whole Lot of Kooky. And I haven't even read the entire article yet, but it's one of these typical MLMs that has all these, you know, jungle juice type, you know, miraculous products that cures about anything you can imagine. And our former upline, our common upline, Don Wilson, is a major distributor. In fact, I just before the show found a website that he has where you can contact him, which I'm about to do after I hang up here and let him know what I think of him. but this is a company, Juva, that it's just, again, it's just one of those companies out there. And I'm going to thank Don for scamming me for a dozen years after the show. that's all I really had to say about this one. I don't know if you had read this story or
I didn't see that one. I'll take a look at it.
It's just a minor, it's really a minor MLM. It's not very big. But I know he's probably scamming his downline. They probably don't have very many retail sales, and they probably don't, and they probably do, I should say, have a tool scam because that's what he's all about. So anyway, let's see. Let me go to the next page. There was a couple others here. I know two or three pages back since we hadn't been on this website for a few weeks that I wanted to talk about.
We were speaking about on Skype. We were talking about an MLM company that is well-known maybe among some gals, but not so much amongst the generic MLM company, called Beauty Counter, is teaming up with a very well-known company called Sephora. So I'm not that much into makeup, just so you guys know, but I do know that when I used to visit New York to visit my parents, and we were in Manhattan, my wife was magnetically attracted to a store called Sephora, which I had no idea what it was before, but it's like I couldn't get her out of there, you know. So anyway, so there was like this attraction, and they are a huge makeup manufacturer. So I'm sure I'm botching it up because I don't know that much about makeup. But they are very, very, they have very good reputation, and they hooked up with Beauty Counter recently, which is somewhat surprising because Sephora has everything to lose and not as much to gain. So why they're doing it with Beauty Counter, and I don't know anything about Beauty Counter, so it might be a good match. But the idea that Sephora is hooking up with any MLM company is a little bit weird, especially based on what we witnessed the last time with that, I think it was Anastasia by Beverly Hills or something that was hooking up with Rodin and Fields. So another, again, reputable makeup company hooked up with an MLM company, and the social backwash on that was huge, where they actually dropped it, you know, almost instantly. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, that is very interesting. There's a YouTube video that I was watching where this woman goes through a lot of detail on what's going on there, and there's going to be another video she's going to put out soon that's basically a distributor question and answer. You know, because the distributors are interested in this too. You know, that one of their concerns is, gee, are you starting to get away from distributors and just go to Sephora to sell your stuff? That's one of the questions that they have. And there's probably others. So, you know, we'll have to wait for that video to come out to see what the answer is. But I think that this is real. And I think it was back in February when the Anastasia, Beverly Hills, and Rodin and Fields hookup was announced, and then, as they say, social media blew up. and within a very short period of time, the Anastasia, Beverly Hills, I don't know if it's the CEO or whoever she is, she said the deal's off. You know, I had no idea who these people were, their reputation, or what you thought of them, you know, you being my customers. And so the deal's off. I mean, she was very quick to make that decision. And I have to think that Sephora knew about that. In fact, Sephora carries Anastasia Beverly Hills makeup as one of their many, many, many lines. They have so many, I think, hundreds of different, you know, brands in their stores. I've never been in there, but I guess it's just a huge store that has literally hundreds of different brands of cosmetics and skincare and all that kind of stuff. So it's really a big deal. So it'll be interesting, you know, because there is that tie in there between Sephora and Anastasia Beverly Hills. And now we have another MLM doing this, collab, they call it now. It's a collaboration. You know, you have to get up with the new generation now, Peter. It's a collab.
I guess,
So it's a short-term promotion. I think probably what's going on here is, you know, with the coronavirus, Sephora is not seeing as much foot traffic, and probably beauty counters looking for a little bit more credibility. And so it's, you know, a match made in heaven, because now the distributors are going to go there. And the distributors are going to tell the people either that they're trying to sell their products to or trying to recruit to be a beauty counter distributor. Hey, look, we're in Sephora now. You know, we're living large. We have great credibility. So go there. And of course, like the woman in the video said, I've never gone in Sephora with the intent of buying something and not bought a bunch of other stuff. You know, that I had no intent to buy when I went there, but I saw all this other stuff and I bought it. And so Sephora is going to have the benefit of that, you know, whether it's customers or prospective distributors or current distributors of beauty counter, you know, they're all going to be going in there pointing out, you know, those products are now in Sephora. And, you know, if you take out the scam part of it, and I don't know that beauty counter is a scam because I don't know what their retail sales level is. Again, I tend to think that they're probably an illegal pyramid just because, you know, their products are kind of expensive. I looked at a couple of them because as soon as I saw that YouTube story, Peter, all the ads that came up on my web browser are for beauty counter.
Right.
They got me nailed. And so I'm looking at some of the products that are coming up on these ads. I'm like, whoa. But I know some women are willing to pay a lot, you know, for cosmetics and skincare. So, you know, it's not out of line with some of the higher end brands, but you do have to think, you know, that's probably for the 2 to 5% income, not your other 90-95% of the women out there that are willing to, you know, pay a lot extra for skincare and makeup. So it's really kind of like it was with Amway. It's really expensive stuff. Whether it's good as the, you know, top end stuff, I don't know, because I don't wear makeup either. but you know, when you've got a blue collar business, you know, and let's face it, most people are blue collar. And I say blue collar, I'm talking about the 95% versus the top 5% of income. They just can't literally afford, especially in these times, you know, with all the layoffs and everything and the threat of layoffs, to go out there and buy expensive skincare and makeup. I mean, a lot of women can't even leave the house right now. What's the point of makeup to begin with? I guess FaceTime, but it's kind of a crazy time in a lot of different ways. Anything more on that one? That's a good story.
Nope, but it's just it's interesting. Just again, the blend between MLM and big retail companies. So I know that in the, you know, Scott, we don't know anything about makeup, or we don't know a lot about makeup. But I do know that my wife doesn't look at prices. When she was doing makeup when she was younger, she didn't look at prices, whether it was makeup or shampoo or personal skincare stuff, because I'm the guy who empties the trash, and I'm in the bathroom and I'm emptying these full bottles. I'm like, what the hell is this? So I didn't like it. I'm like, what the hell? Wait. Like, wait a minute. I know how much you spend on this crap. It's like $70 a bottle and you're throwing out. Yeah, I know. I don't like it, but it's like full. I know, but I don't like it. So that's the mentality. It's, you know, when we talk about like mental illnesses before about this guy Igor, all these gals, you know, they makeup prices, they just don't care. But anyway, I say that playfully, of course. But it's interesting to see the dynamic of how this stuff works. But I also just wanted to kind of bring out that point because it was an article that was worth mentioning, because obviously 80% of the gals that do network marketing are sometimes part time and many of them are women. So it's interesting that they might see beauty counter products in the Sephora store. And I don't know that much about it, so we might be like old news. Maybe, no, they do that sort of stuff all the time. They have these promotional things or whatever. I don't know. But it was worth a mention. So back to us.
Yeah, it is a short-term thing. I think it's 2 or 3 months. Maybe it'll get extended. I don't know. But I did look at when I was just sort of, you know, going through different websites, I was looking at the I think it was the Anastasia Beverly Hills website on Wiki, and they had a list of different collaborations over the years. So apparently this is a quite common thing. I don't know if it's real common between MLM companies and, you know, traditional retailers or not, but certainly it's very common amongst, you know, different non-MLM companies to have these collaborations and short-term promotions and, you know, sort of cross-pollinating, cross-advertising, if you will. You know, it's seen as a win-win. I can see that. It's just that when you introduce, you know, an MLM scam into the middle of that and give them credibility, that's where I have the problem. And again, I don't know. You know, maybe Beauty Counter has tons of retail sales. I have no idea. But anyway, we'll just put that out there for what it's worth. But I agree with you. You know, when people buy expensive things and then throw them away, you know, why not just save the gas money and just, you know, put your cash down the toilet? You could save yourself gas money and all the time of driving. Just flush it, you know.
Put it this way. I haven't bought shampoo ever, since I've been married. I don't think I've had.
Using $70 a bottle of shampoos, you must have.
That's right. I shouldn't say that. I haven't bought shampoo directly in years. I've indirectly paid for it, I'm sure, on my credit card.
So let me just go back to that story that we were talking about earlier, just to give people a reference point. Again, on BehindMLM.com, it's shown as a one-coin story, and I think part of it is because the video is during the time that these guys apparently were in OneCoin. They're now in, what is it called, Dagcoin or something?
Yeah.
I think it's probably kind of the same thing. But the headline is Police Swarm Igor Alberts and Andrea Cimbala's House. So there's your story on BehindMLM.com if you want to go read more details. I guess the link for the video is in there too, isn't it?
It's the one on businessforhome.org, I think, has that one video.
Oh, Business for Home, okay. That's the one.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so go to businessforhome.org, and you can see that wonderful video where they're prancing around. So here, let's just close one here. This is a story that's been going on for a while, and it ended, you know, very predictably. And when I say predictably, it's not because I'm real smart. It's just I know the percentages. Most of the time when there's lawsuits, they end up either getting settled out of court or dismissed for one reason or another. And this is another one of those examples. And it's Neora, which used to be, what was the name of that before?
Nerium.
Nerium, yes. So it's June 27th, 2020, and the headline is Smith's $100 million Neora lawsuit dismissed following arbitration. So apparently they went into arbitration and it got dismissed. I guess they just didn't have much of a case against the company. So that one's closed now. This is my favorite one of the show. I know we have to go here pretty soon. The headline or the date is June 26, 2020. The headline is traffic monsoon, quote unquote, victim claims $9 trillion. That's quite a demand because the entire gross domestic product of the United States is about $21 trillion per year. Okay, so they're asking for almost half of the gross domestic product of the entire country in this lawsuit with Traffic Monsoon. I'll just leave it there.
There you go. Like we said,
do you have any comments?
No comment. A good way to end it. So if you want to check out some of Scott's websites, he's got some really great information. Scott, why don't you give him the website you have?
Yeah, I've got three of them. There's a website called Stop the Amway Tool Scam, .wordpress.com. And there's another one called allmlmfacts.org. And there's the third one called amwayukblog.wordpress.com, which, you know, obviously goes more into the UK situation. And the second one I mentioned, the allmlmfacts, that covers a variety of different MLMs. And then the first one, Stop the Amway Tool Scam, focuses mainly on Amway, but it goes into some other MLMs as well. And then also, again, my YouTube page is Scott Tex Johnson, and I've got some of the recent audios from our shows with guests, as well as the video from both Rich DeVos, that's just an audio, but then the other one from, what's his name? I can't think of his name now. Andy Andrews, up on stage going, yeah, we make several times more from the tools than we do from Amway. And that's almost 20 years ago, and it's still going on. It's just amazing, like I say, how slowly, you know, the wheels of justice roll. But we'll just keep at it, Peter, until something happens.
There we go.
Back
Absolutely.
To you.
Yep, well, thanks for being here. For those people that might be celebrating the 4th of July, I know that it's really quiet around in a lot of different places. So I know a lot of the traditional places aren't doing their fireworks display because we're in a new environment with this whole coronavirus thing. So just stay safe, enjoy your freedom, and or lack of it, and we'll catch you next time on Building Fortunes Radio. Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.